As Barack travels the globe to do his final USA American apology tour, Trump version, the Donald himself works on crafting his cabinet. So far, we have Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, General Flynn as National Security Advisor, and others, but Gingrich is out and Giuliani may be too, as Chris Christie was booted already. And it's not even clear what Christie did, but I'm sure it will become clear in the coming days. Meanwhile, Hillary gives a speech where she literally looks as if she arose from a morgue table and scratched her way to a podium. She's certainly seen better days. The protests as well will eventually go the way of the BLM, Black Lives Matter, and the rest, Occupy, etc. Now, Trump has serious work to do before he can even begin to address Obama's horrific assault on the Constitution and world order. Therefore, landing teams have been assembled to go into each department of government to do a status check and to prepare for takeover. That's all, folks, for now. Stay tuned, P.S. God save us from the backstabbing Mitt Romney at Secretary of State. Good morning, Kelly here, and hope you are well. 6:08, and a lot of stuff going on over at Trump Tower, and I don't know what else to say other than it seems pretty pretty exciting, to be totally honest. As many things as have come up in the media that they've been trying to tear Trump down, I think a lot of it is just falling by the wayside. Nobody's interested in these protests because they realize that they are not genuine protests. They're not spontaneous. They're orchestrated by George Soros, who must be the world's most frustrated person now. He's spent hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in America to try to overturn democracy, and it hasn't worked out yet. And I think that you may have heard the other day when I did my opening and I quoted from his repeated statements of having a messianic complex and feeling like he was a god, especially after he became a billionaire. He could no longer resist his attempts to overturn the order. I think he is certainly a sociopath, but having helped out with the Nazis as a child and to throw his own people into the concentration camp and take their stuff. But I think he's a psychopath. I mean, he would do anything. And none of these seem to care the amount of harm they do. Now, I got 10,000 stories for you here. Whoever really, really terrible story out of Mexico. I've got a couple of things out of ESPN that you're going to find interesting. Well, let's just get into it here. To begin with, let me see if I can find this statement about Hillary that was so terrible. And this is from Alex Jones, of course. But on Hillary giving her speech, I was very taken aback by the speech she gave. In addition to that, she looked terrible. She didn't have the makeup on, but they did something in her debates to stretch her skin so she looked younger. And now her whole face is just kind of baggy and her eyes are barely open. So here's this. All right, so I just wanted to give you that little bit about Hillary. She looked terrible, but, you know, there's this theory that they're going to try to get in through the back door. They're going to try to convince the electors that she's the only person to take the job. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, it's Ralph.
Morning, Ralph. How you doing? Hope you're feeling well.
Thank you, Kelly. Say, Kelly, I don't know if I'm hearing things already or still. Did I hear this morning on the news about 10 minutes before you came on the air that Lincoln and Ford no longer going to move to Mexico? They had planned that they were going to stay here in the United States. And can I give credit to Trump for that? Or am I hearing things?
Well, I didn't hear that. I got to hit the... Oh, okay. Well, Ford tells Trump no Lincoln SUV production going to Mexico. Ford confirms Donald Trump tweet won't move Lincoln production. And then NPR says Trump takes credit for saving a U.S. Ford plant that wasn't being moved. So there, I guess there's two takes on it. That's NPR. But I think for all of these companies, they would be best to wait and see what happens to the tax code here and see what happens to energy prices and the cost of doing business. I think it would be stupid to move right now.
Well, thank you. I wasn't sure if I heard that, actually. But anyway, you got me straight. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. All right. So if you call in, there's a little bleed over from, I think it's from Zia Country. So I do apologize, but we're trying to get the phone worked out here. Trump tweets Ford won't move Lincoln production out of Kentucky. This idea that the plant, you know, this is the terrible thing that has happened under the current president, is that everything that occurred that was bad, Obama said was inevitable, and which is a terrible thing to hear. You know, somebody finds out they have lung cancer and they don't stop smoking, it's inevitable. And, he was a cheerleader for defeat. If you remember Obama getting up very smugly saying, we've got an energy crisis and we can't drill our way out, while we were literally drilling our way out. And that goes to show you the difference between a person who's got a negative opinion. And I mean, obviously, if you're a tyrant, or if you would like to be a tyrant, and Obama has said on occasions before, it would be so great to not have to go through the Congress. Now, I guess that he fulfilled his own fantasy because he ended up not going through Congress with a lot of his decisions, which has now blown up in his face because all of them can be invalidated. So here is a little bit on what Ralph just mentioned, but I think it is good to remember that, you know, this feeling that we've had for 8 years that we're bad people, that we deserve to be punished, that we owe a debt to the rest of the world, which includes opening our borders and, you know, having all these crazy crises around the world. That doesn't have to be that way. I mean, if you get somebody, it's kind of like spousal abuse. Obama comes in on all these great promises and then immediately begins to beat down America. And the more we get beaten down, the more we accept, well, I guess we're not that great of a country. Well, yeah, we've done terrible things. Well, yeah, we're taking too much, water and oil and whatever else the world needs. And we need to be pushed back. And yeah, there's global warming. We'll shrink our economy. We'll shrink down our military. We don't have any more of a right to influence the world than anybody else does. I mean, all of these really disastrous ideas that Obama comes out. You beat somebody down. You know, guys that beat their wives or girlfriends down, they don't just beat them with their fists. They beat them down with their mouth and tell them what a piece of garbage they are. And I just feel like that's what Obama has done for all these years. And part of it to cover up the fact that he didn't know how to lead. but another part of it because they wanted America to fall or to be rebuilt, I'm sure this is what they would say, into a socialist country. That's what George Soros has been spending 30, 40, 50 years trying to do, trying to choke the life out of America and telling us he's doing us a favor. But this whole Hillary Clinton machine, this whole leftist socialist machine came off the tracks. The wheels came off, and she was totally exposed, and the media was exposed, and the elites were exposed as being hacks, as being totally dishonest, and of running a scam. And thank God it was blown up, but we still got a lot of work to do, and Trump has to perform, you know. But here's on the story Ralph brings up about Lincoln and this plant not moving. This is from NBC 10. All right, so this is surreal. This video was on a page that said Trump tweets Ford won't move Lincoln production out of Kentucky. President-elect Donald Trump took to Twitter Thursday night to announce that Ford Motor Company won't be moving Lincoln production from Kentucky to Mexico. Bill Ford, the company's chief executive and namesake, telephoned him with the news that a Lincoln plant would stay in Louisville. Trump said in the tweet, claiming credit for the decision. Now, Ford doesn't have a plant that exclusively builds Lincolns, but it had planned to move production of the Lincoln MKC small SUV out of the Louisville assembly plant so it could make more Ford Escapes there. And a company spokeswoman confirmed Thursday that Ford was considering MKC production at a factory in Cuautitlan, Mexico. The move was negotiated with the United Auto Workers Union in 2015. All right, so anyway, as the country was kind of getting downgraded under Obama, Obama was like, he was like a nurse at a hospice explaining what it's like to die, how to get ready, you know, how to put your affairs in order, why giving up and dying is okay. This kind of leadership is cancerous, you know. It's terrible. And it's heartbreaking to see how many people fell for it. And, you know, when you get past the bravado and the braggadocious, always kind of running with, you know, instead of walking, kind of running in kind of little springy steps, the president tried to put out there that I always thought was another cover for I just think the guy is kind of deep down insecure, and instead of building himself up, which obviously he did going to Harvard and everything, to law school, but I just always detected a kind of a sense of insecurity. And this kind of deep-rooted sense of just identification with failure. It's terrible. And this idea that failure is going to be the root of future success, as we admit that capitalism is wrong, having a big military, America First is wrong. But anyway, I don't want to bore anybody because the times they are changing, as they say. Leon Russell, RIP, his masterpiece, This Masquerade, dedicated to the Obama administration.
Samuel Davidson, Holly Farlow, Rylan Lettingham, and Tina Maldonado, all turning another year around the sun right here in Sia Country. Celebrities that are lucky enough to celebrate their birthdays with our Sia Country VIP crew members. Country singer TJ Osborne of the Brothers Osborne is turning 32 years old today. John Mercer, founder of Capitol Records from 1909 to 1976, and a great singer too. And also a big happy birthday going on to Dana Wilson, winning pressure for the Queen of Armageddon too. 48 years old today. Great weekend. Take a look at it. There's a lot of country birthdays going on this weekend, just so you know. On Saturday, Billy Corinto turns 43 years old. And then on Sunday, from our Sia Country VIP crew, we've got to say a big happy birthday going on to Isis Lea. And then, Joe Walsh of the Eagles, the same gang as the Lone Tree, 69 years old this Sunday. Dirk Bentley turns 41 years old this Sunday. And Josh Turner turns 39 years old this Sunday. Lots of celebrity birthdays, country birthdays going on this weekend. So you can find at 626 with the Air Country Morning Ride.
The Air Country Community Give Back is back. And this time, it's going to the Dallas.
All right, here's some of your headlines for you. Today is the 18th of November, and it is 6:26 right now. Obama releases Haitians coming from Mexico. I'll ask you this. I've asked you this 1,000 times. Why does Obama want a nearly unlimited number of illegals or foreigners, people that don't have any... Many of them don't have any language skills or the most basic rudimentary understanding of our country, of our legal system, our political way. Why does he want more and more of these people to come in? I mean, ultimately, I mean, you can say that he is like a minister bringing in, you know, refugees into his church, but America is not a church. Obama is not a minister, and if he was... Why does he not bring Christians here? Why does he choose to bring 99.9% of the people from the Middle East as Muslims? There has to be a very sinister plan, in my opinion, and I don't see how you can disagree with that. He obviously means what, you know, he might define change in a way that would be positive, but I'll tell you it is Hegelian, I'll throw that term out to you. Hegel, the writer, the philosopher, said that, you know, all change brings with it a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of organization. So no matter how bad the revolution, the aftermath will be better. Karl Marx took those ideas and made them the center point of his Marxism. So... These guys have an excuse to do anything destructive they want. I mean, just understand that. It doesn't matter how many people are injured or hurt. I mean, why else would you have hundreds of thousands of criminal illegals here, some of them doing the worst crimes imaginable? And we've all seen it play out in the media. Some of these people have gone and raped and murdered and, you know, and some of them have been asked 5 or 10 times to leave the country. Then you have these stupid sanctuary cities where they can go and hang out, and then they hurt somebody there, and then the mayor of Santa Fe gets up and says, there's no crime impact from this stuff. Just, you know, the surreal nature of the socialist mindset is just so unbelievable. We believe something. We think something. We have our faith in something, and this thing, socialism, whatever you want to call it, cannot have a negative impact because we've put our faith in it. We believe in it. I mean, come on. That's just ridiculous. And so we've had 8 years of that, 8 years of no growth in the economy, 8 years of not trying to figure out what's going on in the Middle East, crazy deals with our worst enemies, turning our back on our friends, and a border that's totally porous in which anybody who showed up could get across the border and come in here. And according to this government has a right to be here, right? You know, is treated better. And one of the things that blacks were saying, and one of the reasons that Donald Trump doubled the number of blacks voting for him as for Mitt Romney, is they said to themselves, these people that are coming in that are illegals, that are breaking law to get here, are being treated better by the government than we are. All right. So anyway, there's my rant, my second rant. Border Patrol nabs 500 illegals a day. Central Americans pouring in near Yuma. New center to process influx, which means just to release them. Three Pakistani men apprehended at Arizona border. But that's not dangerous. You know, what's dangerous is Trump. Kanye West does 40-minute pro-Trump rant saying, I would have voted for him if I voted, and that America is racist and get over it. Stop focusing on racism, which is undoubtedly true. Everybody has biases. Everybody tends to favor their own people. I mean, is that a shock? Not an excuse to mistreat people for that reason, but, you know, I mean, let's be realistic. Dead girl 14 frozen so she can live again. Study, smart people need more time alone. Town uses digital facial recognition as entry pass. Mumps are surging as illegal entries are surging. These are diseases that we conquered long ago. The favorite to be the French president says, I'm not a Clinton. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, I think that's a good choice. He's very predictable, but he's not reactionary. Virgin Mary statue crying blood. Hundreds flocking to exorcism at school, wrestling with demons. Sorcerer in court over deaths of three children. As time goes by, as we become less Christian, less religious, less Catholic and Christian and Protestant, there's going to be more and more devil worship out there. It just takes the place of it, you know. Police using software to detect crimes. Intelligent humanoid speaking 28 languages. Californian Democrats are ready for a political war against Trump and against the Republicans. And surge in men who share girlfriends. Oh, that's got to be healthy. Okay, so we'll take a little break here and come back and get into, going to be a fun show today. A little more Leon Russell right here. 6:32 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, same 1450. 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text. I've got my texter in my car. I'll have to dash out and get it. And here's some local news for you. This masquerade dedicated to Barack Obama, who's been living in just a fantasy for 8 years. Everywhere. Okay, so we've got a new national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and I've got a little bit of about him here for you from Fox. And coming up right now. All right, so what do you think? I mean, you don't know anything about Jeff Sessions, and he's a very low-key guy. But we do know a lot about Mitt Romney. What do you think about that? I mean, when I heard that, I really choked, gagged on my dinner. Because I understand that there's a power in converting your enemies, and Abraham Lincoln said the best way to deal with your enemies is not to fight them, it's to convert them, because then you change an enemy into a friend. But somebody like Mitt Romney, I thought what he did, he went so far beyond what was reasonable. He got up and said that, you know, Donald Trump was a terrible person, He's a scammer, scam artist. He's a complete fraud. And we need another candidate now. And I, by the way, present myself as a candidate. I thought that was just insane, an insane move. And so bring that guy on, you know. Plus, we want someone who's a little bit hawkish as a Secretary of State, you know, to make up for the lost ground that we've had anyway. It's his cabinet. 644, you know, Trump, no matter what's going to remain controversial. 523-1450 to call in on AM Las Cruces on KOBE and 805-6180. I'll go grab my text machine and we'll be right back. All right, so I've got this clip from Kanye West. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a basically a rapper. He is somebody that one of the members of a very famous band said had no talent. He can't write. He can't sing. He cannot play an instrument. David Crosby said that. He said he's just a complete poser. And a total idiot. And I've been looking for that. I've been looking for that clip for a while, and I couldn't really find it. And I'm here. All right, so I'm here on NBC News, and I can't get this to play. So there must be some download that I need. All right. So while I have another, I'd have to be careful to pull this one off. I've got this great. Have you ever heard of Bill Burr? He's a comedian, a very entertaining guy, very irreverent. But he curses a few times, and I'd have to make sure that I caught that. And I did. All right, so here we go. I did mark where he curses, so I'd have to kind of bring down the mic a little bit. But this is one of the funniest things that I've ever heard. Hold on a second here. And just to let you know, there's the possibility of some foul language here, but it's just brief. But I'll see if I can bleep it out for you. Anyway, here is Bill Burr on Conan. So anyway, I thought that was pretty good. All right, let's take one more break here and come back and finish her up. I got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of random stuff. You know what? I got a treat for you. Frankie, I got the clip where Frankie goes nuclear on the Donald and accuses him of being Hitler-like. We'll be right back. All right, here is Frankie's immortal call when he called in to congratulate Donald Trump on his victory. All right, that was Frankie's gracious call. We'll take a break on the hour here, 523-1450 on 805-6180 text on AM Las Cruces on KOBE. We'll be right back. Thanks, Frankie. Great, great moment in radio history. Well, good morning and happy Friday. If you're just tuning in, 7:05, and I've got a little change of pace here for you. I know there's a lot of Cowboy fans out there, and it appears that Tony Romo is not going to be with the Cowboys in the future. So here is a little clip from that from ESPN. And then I've got a follow-up story that should interest everybody about the drop in viewership in the NFL and the drop in support of even ESPN. Check this out. So do you think that the Cowboys should get rid of Tony Romo? Well, obviously, if he wants to leave, then he's going to probably get out of there. But don't you, if you're going towards the Super Bowl, it seems like the Cowboys are having a Super Bowl-styled year. What are they, 8-1, 9-1, whatever? And so Tony Romo gets hurt at the start of the season, and this Dak Prescott steps in and he's like the greatest first-year quarterback in history. I mean, you know, and he's got a running back also to take a lot of pressure off him, Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm playing this just because I know there's a lot of Dallas fans out there and you're interested in your team. Now, here's a little bit from Tony Romo's speech itself.
But it can be kind of funny. A 31-year-old guy named Shaboy Williams from Townsend, Massachusetts, got so angry with his ex-girlfriend this past March that he decided he was going to set her house on fire. But when the fire wasn't spreading fast enough, he decided he was going to try to accelerate it. Use a can of gasoline? No. Use her hairspray? No. He did it by dumping his bag of Cheetos into it. There's no word if they were flaming hot Cheetos, but by the end of it, pretty sure. Anyway, Cheetos didn't really work as an accelerant. The fire department put the fire out. It was a great call. Like, drunk fire. Chamoy is in court this week, and he was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for malicious destruction of property. Flaming hot Cheetos, malicious arson. I bet his ex-girlfriend is still laughing. I'm just making fun of her. 7-Eleven would be a country's morning ride.
You almost feel like an outsider. The coaches are sympathetic, but they still have to coach, and you're not there. It's a dark place. Probably the darkest it's ever been. You're sad and down and out, and you ask yourself, why did this have to happen? It's in this moment that you find out who you really are and what you're really about. You see, football is a meritocracy. You aren't handed anything. You earn everything, every single day, over and over again. You have to prove it. That's the way that the NFL, that's the way that football works. A great example of this is Dak Prescott and what he's done. He's earned the right to be our quarterback. As hard as that is for me to say, he's earned that right. He's guided our team to an 8-1 record, and that's hard to do. If you think for a second that I don't want to be out there, then you probably never felt the pure ecstasy of competing and winning. That hasn't left me. In fact, it may burn more now than ever. It's not always easy to watch. I think anybody who's been in this position understands that. But what is clear is that I was that kid once. Stepping in, having to prove yourself. I remember the feeling like it was yesterday. It really is an incredible time in your life. And if I remember one thing from back then, it's the people that helped me along when I was young. And if I can be that to Dak, you know, I've tried to be, and I will be going forward. I think you all know something magical is happening to our team. I'm not going to allow this situation to negatively affect Dak or this football team by becoming a constant distraction. I think Dak knows that I have his back, and I think I know that he has mine. Ultimately, it's about the team. It's what we've preached our entire lives. I can remember when I was a kid just starting out and wanting to be a part of something bigger than myself. For every high school kid out there or college player, there's greatness in being the kind of teammate who truly wants to be part of a team. Everyone wants to be the reason they're winning or losing. Every single one of us wants to be that person. But there are special moments that come from a shared commitment to play a role while doing it together. That's what you'll remember, not your stats or your prestige, but the relationships and the achievement that you created through a group. It's hard to do, but there's great joy in that. And all the while, your desire burns to be the best you've ever been. You can be both. I figured that out in this process. It's what separates sports from everything else. It's why we love it. It's why we trust it. It's why I still want to play and compete. Lastly, I just want to leave you with something I've learned in this process as well. You know, I feel like we all have two battles or two enemies going on. One with the man across from you. The second is with the man inside of you. I think once you control the one inside of you, the one across from you really doesn't matter. And I think that's what we're all trying to do. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Man, I thought that was a really a fantastically gracious and insightful speech. Very, very wise. And, you know, you can't dislike a guy like that. Now, I've got another story for you on the heels. And let me take a break and we'll reload for that. But it is about the precipitous giant drop in viewership that the NFL is going through. What's the cause of it? And the connection that it might have to the larger stuff going on, Trump and Hillary, and beyond that, what we stand for as a society. 716 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. You're listening to KOBE with Kelly O'Connell and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back and talk about this kind of symbolic failure of the NFL.
Get a crash and burn. 99.
live from your country's morning ride. It's 7:21 time for some Nashville news updates and the American Music Awards happening this Sunday.
All right, so there is a bigger story that's playing out behind sports, of course. There always is. Sports is entertainment. But sports does have for us moments of heroism, of cowardice, of success and failure. And within that is revealed a lot. And, it was a fantastic thing that his coach, John Wooden, who's considered to be the most successful coach, I believe, in the history of basketball. And he, I think, won 12 national championships. And he had this, my brother went to a camp that was run off of his ideas. And he came back, and I remember the stuff that he brought back from the camp. And the first thing that he focused on was how you tied your shoes. And it was basically you build people up from a foundation. But one of the things that he stated was sports doesn't create character. It reveals it. And I think in the same way, sports can reveal a national character as well. So the NFL ratings are down. The NFL has dismissed the ratings problem. Although it represents billions of dollars, the NFL is worth, in the effect on the economy is probably hundreds of billions of dollars between the pay to the players and the coaches and the income to the stadiums and then the cable agreements and national, international. So it's a big deal. Here's an article from Daily Wire. ESPN admits they mistreat conservatives and it's killing their ratings. And so the NFL, I think, probably misplayed the thing with Colin Kaepernick. I don't know how exactly they should have treated it, but, one of the things is that the Black Lives Matter situation was mishandled by the president, by the media, and they gave it a legitimacy that it shouldn't have had because of the way they approached it. And so this then goes into the NFL, and instead of the NFL saying something like we're not going to do political statements here, and Colin Kaepernick certainly has a right to free speech, don't misunderstand where I'm coming from, but the NFL had misplayed Kaepernick. However, for whatever reason, how they should have handled it is not so much an issue as that they did mishandle it, and it's affecting, we know this because it's affected sales, and prominent people have said, I don't watch the NFL anymore. Now, there's another issue that came up last night when the best linebacker in the league, Kukli, was injured in such a way that he was weeping openly on national TV. And it, I think, brought to mind to me the possibility that the NFL might decline and cease at some point because of the extraordinary violence of the sport. And you got this guy, Gronk, who got a punctured lung. I mean, it's not easy to get a punctured lung. He got hit so hard in the chest that punctured his lung. And this guy is what, he's 6'6", 6'7", and a real beefy guy. He said it was the hardest hit that he had ever had. There are NFL players walking away because they want to keep their brain. They want to keep their cognitive ability. Within this maelstrom of the mishandling of the head injury issues and the demand for outside doctors to be able to come in, we've got this other storm brewing and building, which is, where does the NFL stand? Where does ESPN stand? Where does the NFL stand on Americanism? And, so here is from this statement. ESPN has been hemorrhaging viewers because of its outspoken politics. From giving Caitlyn Jenner a heroism award to stumping for Black Lives Matter, from pushing gun control to praising Colin Kaepernick's heroism, from firing Kurt Schilling for expressing anti-radical Islamic sentiments to threatening Chris Broussard for taking a religious view of homosexuality while doing nothing about Kevin Black Black as Stone for calling the national anthem a war anthem. And ESPN has become, as stated before in Daily Wire, MSNBC with footballs. Now, ESPN's public editor admitted that the network has a problem. Jim Brady admitted one notion that is virtually everyone I spoke to at ESPN dismisses is what some have perceived as unequal treatment of conservatives who make controversial statements versus liberals who do the same. And he added, ESPN is far from immune from the political fever that has afflicted so much of the country over the past year. Internally, there's a feeling among many staffers, both liberal and conservative, that the company's perceived move leftward has had a stifling effect on discourse inside the company and has affected its public-facing product. Consumers have sensed that the same leftward movement alienating some. For most of its history, ESPN was viewed relatively apolitically. Its core focus was and remains today, of course, sports. Although the nature of sports meant an occasional detour into politics and culture was inevitable, there wasn't much chatter about an overall perceived political bias. If there was any tension internally, it didn't manifest itself publicly. And here, this gets to the core right here. That perspective comes across in ESPN's casual leftism, and it alienates viewers. And the writer says, I'm one of them. I used to watch ESPN every time I worked out. Now I'd rather have television off. I'm not interested in hearing talking heads who know less about politics than they do about water polo take for granted that they are morally righteous and everyone on the right is morally obtuse. And here is, I think, the core statement out of this article. The left believes its opinions and feelings are facts. Those who disagree are therefore either morons or fascists. So that same thing that was built into this election, that same thing that rose to the surface during the Obama reign and involved all kinds of different things. Some of it is sexual politics. Others of it is things like global warming, gun control, religion, you name it, are affected by this defective view of life in which it says one group of people are intelligent, they're educated, they are morally enlightened and above the other people because they have facts and the other people just have opinions. They are good, the other people are bad. And the good people, of course, are on the left and the bad people are on the right. How can you have a healthy debate with somebody who has that as an approach? And I think that you see that it has ravaged, that theory has ravaged intellectually the left. It has taken away their ability to present their ideas and put them forward in a way that is winsome or that is persuasive. And so what you have left over is this cult mentality, cargo cult mentality, in which they are increasingly and desperately attacking others who disagree with them, just like Frankie just did, who said, Trump came out of the same situation that Hitler did. I'm not calling him Hitler, but, connect the dots. We need to get back in the society of allowing other people to dissent and disagree and giving them the space to explain why they believe what they believe. And that's the beauty of the spoken word format, talk radio. This is the place where we come and we can discuss ideas. And I can put my ideas out there. I can throw some facts in that everybody will agree to, and maybe you'll agree with me and maybe you won't. But then you can call up and give me your opinion, and we can chew it over and back and forth. But that's one of the pleasures of being alive and being a human being, arguing and thinking and when the NFL involves itself in politics and ESPN becomes a place of far less leftism. If you know anything about sports, and I grew up my whole life playing sports, most of the people that I knew in sports, from players up to coaches, had a tendency to be a little more conservative. And it's because of what Tony Romo started at the beginning of our talk on sports. It's a meritocracy. People in sports understand you get a position on the field because you played better than somebody else. And that's the same idea behind conservatism. You rise or fall based on your own merits, and throw in a little bit of luck and and an accident of birth or what community you were raised in, but you make it or you don't make it based on your work, your commitment, your focus. And then when you bring in leftism, it totally pollutes that. And I think ESPN is killing its brand and the NFL is destroying its viewer base. Just my opinion. Feel free to call in 523-1450, 805-6180. It's a larger argument that's going on around the world. It started with Brexit. Trump is another pillar in this, but it's going to keep going on, and it's a great argument to have. We'll be back, and I've got some more. We're going to shift gears. I've got more fantastic stuff for you. Kelly O'Connell will be right back. All right. So we have been, I occasionally throw out a Beck watch. Here is another Beck watch. I don't know. Something has happened to Beck, and I'm saying outside of whatever position he's taking these days. He's gone from the far right to kind of kissing up to the media and Zuckerberg and apologizing for conservatism and attacking Trump and calling him a demon or a devil or whatever. Anyway, here is from Alex Jones. And there is, when I say there's something that has happened to Beck, his face is extremely red the last time I saw him, and his hair has just become shock white. I don't know if he's got a substance abuse program or whatever, but anyway, here is a little bit on Beck.
I'm willing to give my life for this fight. This isn't about being a peacock like these sellout people on mainstream media who are so arrogant they ran a corpse for office, knew she was losing, and thought they could still steal it, and now are only intensifying the same tactics. But what they're going to do is come out with what they call fake news. I told you this last week because I saw them salivating going, Zuckerberg must be punished. He didn't shut down the fake news like we told him. Well, that'll kill the website and its stock. So Facebook already has the worst censorship out there. Twitter's a close second. Google wants market dominance, so they've not been the worst. They've been the best. Still bad. Still bad. Apple's horrible. So from hate speech to fake news, the content crisis facing Mark Zuckerberg. I love how Hillary and the mainstream media define things. They define anyone disagreeing with their criminality, from WikiLeaks to InfoWars to Matt Drudge, libertarian, conservative, liberal, doesn't matter, people of conscience, informed folks, people that care about civilization, they define us as alt-right, like alternative media. Doesn't matter we're bigger than they are. They control reality. They run corpses for office. They run fake polls. They tell you she's invincible. And they tell you that we're the alt-right. And we even accept that and go, those of us here on the alt-right. No, those of us that aren't insane control freak criminals. I told you 6 months ago that Beck is going to be the new apologist, the true Judas Iscariot, who goes on CNN, who goes on MSNBC, and says, I apologize for horrible conservatives. They're demons. And then Anderson Cooper and Axelrod and everybody else sits there and interviews him, and he apologizes for it and says, Stephen Bannon is an evil racist. Trump is horrible if he doesn't get rid of him. Who the hell would listen to you, you little piece of crap, you Benedict Arnold? I mean, on election day, and then the next day, he came out and said, I guess I can support Trump. I hope he'll be nice. I said, he's suckering you in one more time to pull you under the waves. He's a frickin' ghoul. Just look at him. What do they have on this guy? He looks completely insane now. But by the way, Beck is totally degenerating if you're not looking at him on video. I don't attack him. He's another talk show host, folks. I attack him because he is a true enemy in our ranks. He is a despicable person with a CIA officer, a leftist Ford Foundation operative, assigned to highest levels of government, Anderson Cooper, who himself is worth tens of billions of dollars in hidden assets, one of the richest families in the world. And you have to sit here and look at these race-baiting, class warfare pimps. And we have Senator Reid calling for Trump to cut ties with Stephen Bannon, his chief counselor, because he's an evil anti-globalist and knows what's going on and knows how the real media works.
So anyway, I don't know what's going on with Glenn Beck. And I mean, he's probably, I've said this a number of times, probably the most talented guy on the radio. And I found it disturbing when he got into this, you know, God told me to support Cruz movement and started presenting himself as a national prophet, saying what God wanted. I don't hear him talk about that much anymore, but yeah, I don't know what's going on with the guy. I don't know if it's a mental health issue or he just doesn't really have any core beliefs or whatever, but I found it very disturbing. And, you know, you need somebody like that on your team. So anyway, let me give you a little bit of weather news, and here is the winter storm Argos, and then we'll go into some local news, some local weather.
Potential whiteout conditions expected today from winter storm Argos as it moves off to the east. It was a nasty day on the roads yesterday. There's a look at a car flipped over. This was on Interstate 90 near Banner, Wyoming. And that was just one of multiple reports of accidents due to this winter storm. Over a foot of snow has already fallen in parts of Wyoming, forcing authorities to close Interstate 80 between Laramie and Cheyenne. In Colorado, two massive accidents, one near Evergreen, which was a 20-car pileup. You're seeing it there. This was on Interstate 70. It closed part of the highway for several hours in both directions and injured two people. Now, further northeast on the interstate, a 13-car crash near Clear Creek Canyon. That also closed part of the interstate. The National Weather Service warning people today not to travel. Blizzard conditions, blizzard warnings up for parts of the Dakotas and Minnesota. So this is what we're looking at. Not just snow, but check out this visibility. This is the problem with travel today. It is going to be a tough go pretty much through the better part of your Friday as the storm continues to push to the east. So there's a look at the highways, which will be the most impacted for your Friday.
All right. And just to let, well, it's obviously becoming, it is becoming a lot more like winter. And so I've got a story coming up here that I think you will enjoy. And it is about this guy that has the one of the world's richest guys, what's his face, talking about reading. And anyway, so we'll come back and discuss that, how reading helps you achieve success. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23 1450, and 805-6180-TEDx. We'll be right back.
Yeah, the Donald got the drug, the Colonel got the gun, Junior's only got a knife, you better run. It's out on the plantation, to go hard on the sand. Wild the phone people had to hurt somebody, the fire water's off the builder.
Okay, so I've got this article on Warren Buffett that I thought you might find a little bit interesting. Warren Buffett is famous for not just being a multi-billionaire and at one time, various times, being the world's wealthiest man, but that he reads a lot. Now, this is from CNBC, an article called Warren Buffett's Reading Routine Could Make You Smarter, Science Suggests. Warren Buffett credits many of his great money decisions to his voracious reading habit. He says he starts every morning by poring over several newspapers and estimates he spends as much as 80% of his day reading. And he said the key to his success is reading 500 pages a day. We have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Deborah. I hope you don't mind. Excuse me. I'm putting a request out to the audience. I'm having a very difficult time finding a one-bedroom, and there's problems at the real estate. We can't get a hold of someone I used to rent from, so then they won't rent to me because of that.
Oh, what's your phone number?
Yeah, 575-805-1525.
One more time, slowly, please.
Yeah, 575-805-1525.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. Let's, folks, if you have a room for her. All right, so Warren Buffett crediting reading something like 500 pages like this a day. That's how knowledge works. It builds up like compound interest. All of you can do it, but I can guarantee not many of you will do it. Yeah, I read and think, Buffett said, so I do more reading and thinking and make less impulse decisions than most people in business. I do it because I like this kind of life. And scientists stating that this could be a great way to become smarter and wealthier. And author Tim Corley spent 5 years studying the daily activities of 233 rich people and 128 poor people, which he wrote about in his book, Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. He found that 67% of rich people limited TV time to 1 hour or less per day, compared to only 23% of poor people. And reading makes you smarter, larger vocabulary, more knowledge. And the data has found this is true time and again, and brain scans do verify that. You're likely to be emotionally intelligent, more emotionally intelligent, and you're likely to stay mentally sharp. So anyway, in that vein, I've been reading a book, just starting it out, called The Medieval Origins of the Legal Profession. I thought you might find it kind of interesting. Just a few tidbits from the beginning of it. Around the year 1150, a small number of jurists were teaching Roman or canon law and practicing in ecclesiastical or church courts in a handful of cities in Europe. Within 100 years, there was a group of professional lawyers who had set up shop in every European city of any consequence and in some smaller towns as well. So the legal profession, as we understand it, started a little less than 1,000 years ago in Europe. Now, remember what I had said to you, it's important to recall the impact of Christianity on the history of Europe. This author, his name is James A. Brundage, says, "The evidence that I have explored suggests that professional lawyers first emerged in the courts of the medieval church. Practitioners in civil courts that employed the procedural system of the ius community quickly followed suit and adopted procedures that resembled those already introduced in the ecclesiastical courts." So I think that there is a well-established pattern that has occurred in Europe. Things start out in the church, and if they work well in the church, then people start to say, well, I think this is something we should switch over to the civil society or the just the regular culture. And so, you know, it's a great way to test drive stuff. And at one point, the legal system was in the church for the most part. And then as time went by, it kind of slowly got adapted over. And now we don't really have church court anymore. And he states the legal professionals who became visible in growing numbers from the second quarter of the 13th century to the 1200s forward performed four different kinds of functions. Advocates were university-trained legal experts who furnished clients with knowledgeable legal advice and argued points of law on their behalf in the courts. And judges usually came from this. Proctors were agents who literally represented their clients during litigation in the sense that they could and frequently did appear not only on the client's behalf, but in his place. And another one is notaries, believe it or not, produced legal instruments of all kinds, including reams of documents that litigation demanded. And notaries public, commissioned by high-ranking authorities, such as an emperor or a pope, prepared contracts, testaments, and other documents. And courts operated off these. And so, and I'm looking for... I'll look for the fourth one. I'm not seeing it right here, but all right. So anyway, take a little break here. Reading is fundamental. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And my computer is freezing up a little bit here. So let me see if there's anything else you might find notable. And, oh, yeah, there's a few more stories that have popped up here. Dollar sees record-winning run versus the euro. Thomas saying that Scalia should be honored by reigning in government. And there is Navy identifies a mystery plane that was flying over Denver, Colorado. And, cursing link to higher intelligence. So anyway, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, and it is 7:54. There's a last one to kiss, there's a place to shoot. A stab on your friends is such a bag of food. If you out on the plantation, oh, heaven help you, the squire. All right, 7:57, and here's a little bit on anti-Trump groups rising up with safety pins.
They have noticed a new accessory on people's clothing following the U.S. presidential election, and it has nothing to do with fashion or style, but a symbol for solidarity, a safety pin. The safety pin is a visual that represents inclusion for all minority groups, those who felt marginalized or maligned throughout Donald Trump's divisive run for the White House or threatened by a Trump America. The word safety indicates to those who might feel in danger that the person wearing the pin is safe, an ally. In the wake of Trump winning the presidency, many people across the U.S. are frightened, fearing what Trump has already threatened against them and the unknown that they and their families could face. That fear was fueled by rhetoric used by Trump and felt by a number of minority groups that he, the campaign, and as a result, his supporters, are targeting them, identifying them as unequal and not welcome nor safe in their own country. Trump's election victory has been compared to Brexit in the UK. It was there where the safety pin campaign was first started, following the historic vote to leave the European Union, becoming a symbol of solidarity with refugees, other migrants, and people of color who found themselves increasingly subjected to racist attacks. Those safety pins are unlikely to change Trump's policies or views in any way. Those fastening a safety pin are declaring themselves a safe place and an ally in the fight against intolerance. A sign to women, people of all races and religions, the LGBTQ community, immigrants, and other marginalized groups that they are not alone. For FoxNews.com, I'm Rob Demetrius.
Poor babies. Hopefully they'll get over it. Anyway, thanks for listening in, and happy Friday to you. We'll see you back in a couple of days. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. Have a wonderful couple of days off, hopefully, and see you back soon. Ciao.
And the cold steel blade is shining, enough to cause your blood to freeze. But the drummer is a drummer, a rolling stone number on Junior's head and on his knees. Whoa! Home alone, the cowboys are turned on in Tinseltown. I knew that beat some of camera rolling if Andy wasn't standing around. Yeah, the drummer got the drum, the colonel got the gun, Junior's only got a navy better run. If we shoot out on the plantation, we'll go out on the sail.